Today, I'm really pleased to be talking to two people who really are the faces and the voices of cricket commentary in Bangladesh. I'm really happy to introduce them both. Firstly, we have Tino Mawoyo from Zimbabwe, all the way from Zimbabwe, obviously an ex-Test international himself, and now very much a feature in the Combox. Talking to people all over the world, giving his expert views and analysis. Welcome, Tino.
Thank you very much, Tahid. How are you doing? Nice to hear from you again.
I'm doing really well. It's great to have you on. And also, it's my great pleasure to introduce one of the voices, I would say. Actually, I started off listening to him on BBC Test Match Special, probably one of England's tours, maybe 03, maybe a few years after that, but certainly someone I've listened to and now watched an awful lot, and I'm sure a lot of people out there know his face very well. He is, of course, Mr. Shamim Chowdhury. Welcome, Shamim bhai.
Thank you very much, Tahid. It's a pleasure to join Tino and you in this little chat, and I hope we can exchange views nicely. It's very kind of you to invite me, of course.
I sincerely hope so too. Although, you know, if we want to argue about certain points, feel free. You know, healthy debate is always good, I think. So yeah, thank you so much both for joining us. I guess, you know, the first topic for conversation, it's one that there's no escaping for any of us anywhere around the world, is of course the impact of COVID-19 and the coronavirus. Obviously, there's a huge impact to people's lives that is going on with the coronavirus. But I wanted to get your views in particular on the impact of COVID-19 in international cricket. So as we all know, there's obviously been quite a long gap now in terms of international cricket being played. But I just wanted to kind of hear your views on if you think it's likely that big kind of tournaments such as the Test Championship, the World T20, the Asia Cup, how likely do you think it is for those tournaments to start resuming? Shamim bhai, maybe we'll start with you.
All right, it's a situation that the world has never even imagined that they're going to face. So serious considerations are there regarding restarting our lives. And cricket, unfortunately, doesn't really be in the top rung of the survival game, if I can put it that way. So the question now is getting back economically stronger. Some countries are easing their restrictions, like where you are in England and also here in Bangladesh. Just today, they've started after 6 days of closure. We've just started reopening offices and things, but the death rates are not going down. That is the big problem. So it's a very delicate balancing act here by the governments of the different countries in trying to figure out a safe way of restarting the economy at the same time, keeping people safe. It's not going to be an easy matter. And obviously, it will relate to different kind of sports. And as we're talking about cricket, we are all involved in cricket. Cricket has got different problems in addition to factors outside the ground. Immediate one that comes to my mind is pacemen are already bickering about non-use of saliva on the balls. I mean, that's one thing. That is going to be a minor problem, but these are minor problems together compound into bigger ones. And of course, when it comes to traveling, the safety of the players, every country is dependent on the international arena opening up. The ICC have got to take a bold step in actually working out a plan of how to get back. They have already, we all know, given some guidelines, but I just feel that need to be a little more specific in what needs to be done by giving a few dates. I think that's one area that it's still a little bit gray to me. So I think that's where we can work on to get this thing restarted again.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I totally hear what you're saying. I think, like you say, there's huge logistical barriers to kind of overcome before kind of international cricket can resume. I mean, it's interesting, the situation, as you say, here in England. Some of the lockdown measures are starting to gradually ease. So things are very gradually starting to return to normal, although there's still a way to go for that. And interestingly, there have been lots of positive noises from the ECB, the English Cricket Board, around hosting the two summer series that were supposed to be hosted. So we're now, I think, in a position where we're actually expecting the West Indies to arrive in the country, maybe sort of mid to late June, potentially with that series starting in July, and then also looking at the Pakistan series being played afterwards. And all of that, hopefully, to be played within a bio-secure environment. But I agree with you, Shaminbhai. I think there's lots still kind of details to kind of iron out to really make that happen. Tino, interesting just to hear your views on that in terms of where we are in Zimbabwe, and also, you know, your views on, do you think it's actually likely that the World T20, for example, will go ahead?
Yeah, I think I'll just, thanks, Tohid, for your question. I'll just start on where we are in Zimbabwe. So I don't know how much you've been keeping tabs on us, but when we got back, our domestic season obviously was disbanded. So whatever games guys had played at first class level, and I think we'd played a little bit of the Pro 50 stuff, that's all just been disbanded for the season now. And just to touch a little bit on, you talk about ICC tournaments, for example. And as Shamim has rightly said, they have given indications that possibly we can start to maybe look at doing some of the bilateral series that were lined up, or some that have been postponed. Whether they'll come together and have an ICC event where you've got so many different people coming from different places at the moment, I don't think they will. I have heard a little bit of chat about maybe looking to postpone that World Cup until February next year. But I think definitely the ICC will be a lot more cautious in terms of hosting their tournaments where you've got a host of different countries, people coming from different places around the world, where they really haven't been able to go into there and see exactly what the situation is on the ground. But as you say, things are starting to ease up as well here in Zimbabwe. And I think it was just last week that the Ministry of Sport has announced some sports that can now be resumed, where there's not so much contact in between. So slowly but surely, the teams will be starting to get back to their training. I think it's been discussed here as well. But as you say, it's been 2 months or maybe a bit more in some places where, you know, people haven't been able to do anything in terms of physical training other than those that might have, you know, a bit of space around in the back garden, or obviously just doing body weight exercises, etc. So I think it'll be very key, especially for those countries that are deciding to go back into international cricket, and if they are going to have some of their bilateral tours, the fitness side of things in particular for the players will be very important before they go into those tours.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that point about sort of training and fitness, Tino. I think, I mean, it'd be very interesting to hear from you about kind of how difficult is it as a professional to kind of basically be inactive pretty much for, like you say, a couple of months, and then to kind of get back into being match fit and in a state where you can actually perform to the highest level in a match again. You know, can you just tell us about how difficult it is to go from inactivity to match fit, basically?
I think especially if you're an international sportsman or a high level sportsman, and the body is used to being used all the time and keeping yourself as fit as possible. The situation that COVID-19 has brought upon the international players is one that is, of course, on the physical side of things, very, very difficult for guys to keep and to try and keep themselves in tune. I don't know what the situation is, Shamim. Maybe you can shed some light on that a bit later in terms of the Bangladesh players. But out here in Zimbabwe, the guys have been given some programs by the national fitness trainers as to what they can do at home. And you can only do so much, unfortunately. I think maybe in the last week or so, like I've mentioned, people are allowed to go running on the road now. And maybe if you can get across to a ground and you can do your running at the ground. So I think that this period is very, very important for those players who might be taking part, as I said earlier, in international cricket or trying to get back into it, that as soon as they get an opportunity, they can go and do whatever they want. Gyms obviously are still very, very closed because that will just be an area where you can allow that to spread very quickly. So yeah, I think the guys themselves in particular will be quite chuffed that they can get out now, do a bit of a run on the road, get to the ground and do some fitness training there.
Sure. So, I mean, Shamimbhai, in Bangladesh, do you get a sense of the players being well supported in terms of, like Tino was saying, you know, are they being given individual training plans, for example, or are they kind of a little bit left to their own devices?
Before I answer that, I'd like to mention that knowing Tino and what he's been through, if we could pan the camera down to his stomach, you'd see that it's pretty bloated and he's not very fit at the moment. I can guarantee that.
Oh, there's a few of us with lockdown bellies, I can assure
you. Yeah, there you go. And he's a specialist at that. He did manage to reduce a lot of weight the last time he came. On one of his prior visits, he had put on a lot of weight, but he made a concerted effort to reduce weight. But I'm sure he's not trying to do that at the moment, just enjoying staying at home.
That was actually, of course, Shamim, when I was trying to get back into the test side, which I unfortunately didn't manage to. But yeah, no, it's been a very tough couple of months. Of course, you'll remember that I just snuck out of Bangladesh at the end of the Zimbabwean tour, which we'll discuss a little bit later. So yeah, I got home literally, at least people weren't being put away in quarantine for the 21 days or the 14 days that they're doing now. So I got out just in time and was allowed to come in and be at home.
Right. Let me just get back to your point, Tawhid, about the fitness regime as such. There have been certain guidelines from the board. It has not been sort of catering to individuals. It's more generalized more than anything else. And both of you must be knowing, Tawhid and Tino, that Dhaka, players living in Dhaka do not have the luxury of open spaces as such. Mostly they're staying in apartments and they have very limited space to actually work out. And also with the sort of semi-lockdown or quarantine, whatever you call, they have not really ventured out to whatever open spaces there are available, even on the streets, which are pretty open now because there's no traffic on the roads. You can easily run on the roads, but everyone's been avoiding that. Some of the more affluent players, if you can put it that way, have some facilities of treadmills or other exercising materials, you know, equipment in their flats, so they have that little bit of an advantage. But for most of the players, that's not available, and they're having to just depend on freehand exercise, different breathing exercises. Yeah, everyone's trying their best to stay fit, but it's not the same thing, is it, Tino, to actually going to the gym and working out and doing it in a proper, organized manner. So there is absolutely definitely that disadvantage that the Bangladeshi players have at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting to hear. I guess, yeah, the issue of just basically, like you say, resources is an important one. So I know during lockdown here in the UK, all of the English national team players, I think, once the lockdown measures started to ease slightly, they could do one-to-one training. So I understand that they were kind of, all the national team players were assigned an individual coach to kind of, you know, get back into both fitness and form as well. But I take your point about things being very different over in Bangladesh. I wanted to also touch on the economic impact that COVID-19 is having on cricket in general in both Bangladesh and Zimbabwe. So by economic impact, I guess both at kind of cricket board level, but also actually at kind of player level. So I know, for example, in Bangladesh that there were a couple of games played in the DPL before the lockdown began. So obviously a lot of kind of domestic players in Bangladesh rely on the DPL as a source of income. Can you maybe just tell us what's being done to kind of maybe support the domestic players and the domestic structure in Bangladesh?
Yes, as you mentioned, the Dhaka Premier League has been the bread and butter for Bangladeshi players over the years. And the Bangladesh Premier League is more glitzy. It does give you more money to the players who get it. Actual chance to play it, but it's the Dhaka Premier League, which has been the sole bread earner for that level of players. And also, under certain circumstances, of course, the national leagues, which are supported by some sponsor groups. But what the difference, I feel, between the Zimbabwean Cricket Board, and the Bangladesh Cricket Board is that the Bangladesh Cricket Board, are more affluent. No denying that. Their coffers are pretty full and they have not been under extreme duress to make the money available to the players. I heard that the money from the Cricket World Cup for the three wins, I think they get about £20,000 or dollars or something like that. That was withheld by the board, supposed to be given to the players. But today, the players' union and the board have agreed that this money will be disbursed to the players concerned. Now, these are only like 15 players who went to the World Cup. What about the rest? These guys have been they are being paid. The first month they were paid, the salaried persons got the salaries, but it is the clubs who make the payments to these players for the Dhaka Premier League. So the clubs are not really coming forward. I mean, it's understandable, because the clubs are dependent on sponsors. The sponsors are possibly rich business persons who are themselves affected by the coronavirus. So it's a vicious circle, you know. And that's why, despite the efforts, and definitely the Bangladesh Cricket Board are making efforts to just tie it in between the clubs and subsidize them in a way, give little bits of amounts here and there, give some relief to poorer players. Even the coaches have been taken into consideration because they're never looked after. So slowly and gradually, there is definitely an effort made, but whatever effort, I think in the long run, getting money on a regular basis from your profession, whichever segment of the cricketing fraternity you are in, it's going to be nowhere near what they used to earn. It's just survival at the moment for most people.
And Tino, in Zimbabwe, is it a similar story?
Well, I was just listening to Shamim now, and of course, I know a bit about domestic cricket in Bangladesh myself, spending lots of time there. But I think the Bangladesh players are extremely blessed to have other big tournaments like that and people who've got the money in the coffers to put behind such things. So it's not just the top cricketers who are on central contract, etc., who have some way to draw some money from in terms of cricket. For us, I think the biggest blow has been the fact that a lot of our franchise players who are not on a full-time contract but are contracted while the season is going on, the majority of them get clubs in the UK or in Ireland or in Scotland and go over and play in the summer there, which is obviously our winter when we're not playing. But because of this, a lot of them haven't been able to do that. There are a few younger ones who got some nice deals in Australia. So they were in Australia to play, but also were due to come back home when the season was done, and they're not even able to do that. So they're also just sitting there now and really not able to play the sport that they went across there to play. So, I think in terms of the Bangladesh guys, they're very lucky to have that. Of course, Shamim mentioned that going forward, we're probably not going to have people earning the way that they did, or maybe not getting their remuneration coming in quite when it's supposed to be. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that I've seen that the Zimbabwean younger guys in the franchises are suffering from is the fact that they're not able to go overseas, one, just for the cricket, of course, but two, to earn a living.
Yeah, no, it certainly sounds like a real sort of dire situation for domestic cricketers, I think, in both Bangladesh and Zimbabwe. I guess in the UK, it's slightly different. I think the pinch is certainly being felt by some, maybe, you know, those who aren't at, certainly who aren't at international level. And actually, I know this summer, there's been a big impact by the new tournament that was supposed to be launched. The 100 has now been postponed by 12 months. So I know a lot of players had been signed up to franchises. It was, you know, a new all shiny kind of singing, dancing new tournament that was being launched. Obviously, it's not happening this year. And I know a lot of contracts that players, you know, quite lucrative contracts, aren't basically now, you know, they're not being honoured, or that, you know, they've just been terminated. So there's certainly a pinch being felt, albeit, you know, at a different level, no doubt. I was also interested in, I mean, I know the Bangladesh Cricket Board, for instance, has actually been doing quite a lot of charity work in terms of providing lots of donations to kind of poorer sections of the community because of coronavirus, and obviously Ramadan just ended a week or so ago. So I know in terms of, you know, just kind of charity donations, the board's been doing a lot. I know the players have been doing a lot as well. And yeah, obviously that's a really positive thing. And, you know, hopefully that's, you know, that kind of level of kind of charity kind of continues, hopefully. And I was also interested to see that one of the coaches, Daniel Vittori, obviously the spin coach, albeit on a 100-day contract, I know that he's now pledged to kind of donate part of his salary to some of the staff members within the BCB who aren't that well paid. So I think that's really a positive thing to come out of the BCB. Although, as I think, Shabin, by you kind of inferred, I think there is still more that the board could do to support not only kind of national team players, but actually domestic team players as well.
Yeah, I think they're making an effort. It's not that there isn't a lack of effort on their part. It's also a question of logistics. You know, sometimes it's difficult to reach them. A lot of people have gone out of Dhaka, and maybe they haven't got the bank accounts that need, you know, because the banks were also closed for a while. It takes a bit of time. And as you mentioned, we've also gone through the period of Ramadan, where more people automatically in our religion tend to give to the poor voluntarily. You know, it's also the zakat that you give just prior to Eid. So individually, a lot of things is being done. And also, I must say, because the board can't always really get together, it's a virtual meeting like this, where you really can't speak your mind, you can't really make those kind of decisions. So it tends to be on the onus, on the shoulders of some of the seniors in the board to make certain decisions. So when it comes to monetary matters, they have to sort of, you know, keep their decisions covered, so that they can actually, if questions are asked, they can answer in a proper manner. So whenever handling money, it's not the easiest thing, but I'm sure they have their best intentions in mind. And the first intention, obviously, of the board, in addition to arrangement of funds, will be to get the season restarted. Now, this is one area I feel, compared to some of the other boards, we haven't got any clear directions as to when the players might start practicing, going to gyms, or when we might be expecting to see cricket in the middle. Forget bilateral series, just the domestic season starting. Doesn't matter if the monsoon is coming. You've got to forget the weather now. Play cricket all year round to make up for lost time. So this is one area I think the Bangladesh Cricket Board need to just pull up their socks a little bit and say, right, we've just opened up to for businesses and shops and stores, and communication started within the country. So let's have a calendar, a plan to restart cricket. Let's say in 15 days, the boys come out and start practicing. And a month after that, we want to do this, that. Categorically, that's what I want them to do now.
Definitely, I think that would be most welcome, not only within Bangladesh and, you know, Bangladesh cricket, but also the supporters out there. I know, you know, personally, lots of support, you know, Bangladesh supporters in the UK, and I'm sure across the world, really want to know some, you know, as concrete as possible news that, you know, such and such a tour will be happening or such a bilateral series will be taking place. I think it's quite important for people to have hope, certainly at this particular time. Okay, so let's move away then from potential cricket that might happen and the gap of cricket that hasn't happened to some cricket that did actually happen. It was a couple of months ago now that the series, of course, between Bangladesh and Zimbabwe in Bangladesh. It was a series that comprised of one test match, three ODIs and two T20s. I think it's fair to say it was an overwhelming successful series for Bangladesh. One I think that they really needed. I think performance-wise, they're quite a low ebb, poor performances in terms of tours of both India and Pakistan. So I think just in terms of confidence building, it was really vital for them to do well in that series, and categorically they did. It was a clean sweep, so it doesn't get much better than that. Tina, I don't want to dwell on this too much because, you know, I don't want to rub salt into the wound, as it were. But let's maybe just kind of pick up on one or two highlights of the series itself and a couple of key performances. So Shamim Bhai, from a Bangladesh point of view, you know, really good series with the bat in the test match, certainly for Mushafiq, scoring a double century, and also Momenul Haque, the captain. And then in the white ball series, I think that was really dominated runs-wise by both Tamim and Litton Das, who I think was, hopefully, I feel it was a series that really kind of consolidated him and his confidence and his stature as a true international for Bangladesh. So yeah, just your kind of take on the series.
Well, obviously, as you mentioned, Bangladesh needed a morale booster after their very dismal performances in India and Pakistan. I was on the Pakistan tour. I tell you what, it wasn't a very good experience cricket-wise. It was nice otherwise, but so they needed to really come back strongly. And thankfully for them, they performed well against Zimbabwe. Inside, I must say this, that Zimbabwe were depleted to a certain extent. They had problems with Sean Williams, I think, if my memory serves me right, not arriving on time. Then Craig Irwin was sick after the first test match. He was not available for most of the shorter version tour. And they had their problems with fitness problems with their players. So they weren't always playing at the 100% availability of the top players. So beside that, I think you're absolutely right. It was quite emphatic with the test match. They won the first one. The second one, I think they won by Momenul Haque. And it was... what I mean to say is that Zimbabwe, at one point in time, at different points in time, right through the tour, seemed to be there or thereabouts, but somehow they just could not muster that extra ingredient to really challenge Bangladesh, except for the second one-day international, which I thought they should have won. And I think, in a way, they won. You do a little bit of a mistake, let me put it that way, in a call for a bouncer, which went over the head. That could have easily been called a wide. It could have brought an extra ball, an extra run, and Zimbabwe were cruising. Fabulous innings right there when they were in tatters, needing to score almost 16 runs per over on average. And those two batsmen, exceptional performance. I'm sure Tino can talk more in detail about that. But other than that, Bangladesh did well in the first one, came back strongly in the remaining ODI and the T20s. So Zimbabwe have got a lot to learn from that. And I'm sure they've got the capability. They're depending on players like Brendan Taylor and Sikandar Raza, who did not click at all in this tour. And they need the seniors to ensure that they actually assert their authority and play to their requirements and experience. But that was missing. The youngsters did well. I think a lot of scope, but suddenly coronavirus happens and that little trend that Zimbabwe needed to go up has been curtailed somewhat.
Sure. I mean, Tino, yeah, your impressions on the tour as well. I think, yeah, Charmaine Bice kind of summed it up quite well there. But yeah, your kind of general thoughts and impressions and kind of picking out any highlights such as they are from a Zimbabwe point of view.
Yeah, so obviously the results show that the tour did not go well for the Zimbabwean team on the field of play. And I think Shamim's just made mention there to a couple of injuries and niggles and, you know, stuff off the field that didn't help the team itself. I mean, Chamu Chibaba, the one-day captain, I think split his webbing in the first game, took no further part in the series. And I just want to focus on possibly just the test match to start off with, where, as Shamim quite rightly said, the results at the end of it show that Zimbabwe didn't win a game on the tour. But it wasn't always a situation where things weren't going well on the field. I think Prince Mashaure batted beautifully in that test match, in particular in the first innings. A little bit of Kevin Kasuza, who did well when Sri Lanka were here a couple of months earlier at the beginning of the year. Craig Irvin was really good with the bat. Of course, we said Sean Williams wasn't here. But just looking at the test match and going into the shorter stuff, the biggest trend for me, especially in a one-day series where I think Zimbabwe were chasing 300 every game. The other one, I think, was 322, and it was only in 47 overs. If you don't have your big guns scoring runs for you, chasing totals of 300, which are becoming the norm now in one-day cricket anyway, then you're always going to struggle. Brendan Taylor struggled on the tour. We talked about, again, Sean and Craig not being available the whole time. And I think Wesley Madebere, who came into the one-day side and really, really impressed me coming from the Under-19 World Cup, was the most consistent batsman in the one-day series. And I'm saying to myself, this is a 18 or 19-year-old who's coming from the World Cup. I mean, kudos to him. And wonderful that, you know, we've got somebody so young, but who can walk into international cricket and be competent. But he should be batting for 30 overs with a Brendan Taylor or a Chamu Chibaba. So he can learn off those people. He can learn how to pace a one-day innings, which he showed that he can do anyway. But he does need that experience to be around him. If a team's scoring 330 in a one-day game, then 270 of those have got to be coming from the senior batsmen. And I think that's what, in particular, in the one-day series, Zimbabwe struggled with. Tendai Chatara and Kyle Jarvis were exceptional the last tour that Zimbabwe had in Dhaka in the test match and in Sylhet. Unfortunately, they were both injured on this tour as well. So if you look at our bowling lineup in particular, it was also lacking in terms of experience. And I think I remember, Shamim, we had a graphic that came up in one of the one-day games. I think it was the second one. And it was talking about Mashrafi Murtaza. And I think he had 240-odd games. You look at the Zimbabwean bowling lineup, we had one who was on debut. We had one, I think, Carl Mumba, who had played three or four games. Donald Tirupano had played 30-odd games. And you put their total matches together, they're not even coming up to, you know, a quarter of what Mashrafi's done. Of course, Mashrafi played for a very long time and a wonderful bowler. But just an example. So also not having those two senior bowlers is something that didn't help Zimbabwe's cause.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like there are a number of handicaps for Zimbabwe. And yeah, but like you say, on the sort of positive side, it sounds like there is a promise of youth amongst the ranks, which is obviously something that's vitally important for the future. Just one player that I did want to kind of focus on briefly, Tino, was the Don. I mean, obviously a cricketer with a name like the Don deserves to have some sort of recognition, but his feats during the second ODI that Shamim Bhai mentioned there were quite phenomenal. I mean, the last over of that game had me biting my nails right to the end. Do you want to just tell us briefly about him?
Yeah, so I've had the pleasure of playing the majority of my first-class career with Donald Tirupano, who is, of course, from the same franchise at Mountaineers. And even since we were in high school, we started playing together. But a guy who puts a lot of time into his game and has done so over the last couple of years. And I feel a little bit for him because I don't think he gets given the credit that he duly deserves for how much effort he puts into his game. And I think over the years as well, in terms of selection, he probably hasn't been selected in the team as often and given a fair run over a period of time to prove his worth. But I think he's starting to do that now as he matures. And we go back to that second ODI. Shamim, that was just an unbelievable innings. I think he ended up nearly 80 off 40-odd deliveries. And of course, not ideal that it wasn't a losing cause, but that also shows you that he's not somebody who just does work with the ball. He's very handy with the bat. And I think I was on air with you, Shamim, or
no,
somebody.
No, not me. I'll tell you what happened in the last over after you finished. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I was going to refer to the test match where a very interesting stat was brought out to hit that Donald Tirupano, I think for a number 8 or 9 batsmen, has got the highest average of balls faced in a test match inning. So I think he faces on average 50 balls every time he goes out to bat in a test match. But for the position that he plays in a test match, you wouldn't expect that from him. So, I mean, that's also just testimony to how well he's improved himself as a batsman. And he's got a very healthy average at test level anyway for what we would deem a bowling all-rounder. But I mean, a quality cricketer, of course, had to take over the reins of the new ball when Chatara and Jarvis weren't there. And I think in certain instances, he did a good job. I think he had a heavy load for himself with the two younger and very inexperienced bowlers, which was Carl Mumba and Charlton.
Mpofu was there, I think. And Mpofu
played, I think he played a couple of one-day games, yeah. So he's a quality cricketer. And as I say, in terms of selection, I hope now that he will have a permanent place in the side where he doesn't have to worry about trying to get himself or stay in the team. He's got a clear mindset where he knows I'll be in the side. He knows the role that he has to play with bat and ball. And he can go and do that without, I'll use one of Shamim's favorite words, gremlins in the back of his head.
No, yeah, I mean,
right. Now, I'd like to add something about Donald Tirupano. He's just such a clean hitter of the ball. I mean, he was not just, it was a swashbuckling innings, but he was playing proper cricketing shots. And most
timed
of
the ball so nicely.
Yeah, he timed balls, placed the balls. Tell you what, I just mentioning that I wasn't doing the last over because, as you might be knowing, Tawhid, and of course, Tina knows that I do the most of the post-match presentation. So I had to sort of take a walk before the last two overs are bowled. I had to walk around the edge of the boundary area while this mayhem was going on in the middle by Donald Tirupano. And every time the bowler came in, I was sort of looking around. I don't normally, you know, watch out for the balls coming towards me. I was hoping that I'd put on a helmet, just walking around the outside of the ground. But anytime Donald would have hit one over and it would hit me on the head. So that was absolutely thrilling. And also the other side, if you look around to the crowd itself, you know, Bangladeshi supporters are very, very supportive of their team, for use of a better word. Once this was going on in the middle, they were absolutely shocked. They just couldn't believe their eyes. But what a wonderful exhibition of cricket. And that lifted. I think that game gave that little bit of extra hope to Zimbabwe as a team, that they can do it, and they can take a lot of heart from that effort by Tiripano.
And I think, and I said this while we were there as well, I think had they won that game in such a fashion, it really would have lifted the spirits of the team going forward. And I think the results, not in terms of the match results, but definitely the performance that the Zimbabweans would have put in after that, I think for the remainder of the series and the T20s, would have been very different. But I think it would be very unfair for us not to mention Tino Mtombodzi as well, because he was with Donald at the end. And Tino's not played a lot of international cricket, and he came in at a time where, you know, I think at one stage, Zimbabwe was needing 16s, Shamim, and they ended up 3 or 4 runs short. But his partnership with Donald, I think they ended up with a partnership of 80-odd or whatever, was really key for. And I think the support he gave Donald especially was important, because had he not got that support, then he probably wouldn't have gone and taken the game as deep as he did. But as you said earlier, it wasn't all bad for Zimbabwe in the series. And moments like that, I think, are key for Zimbabwe, because one, it certainly shows that the guys have the quality to do it. It's just a bit more exposure, a bit more game time, and realizing when you're in control and what you need to do to win those games. And I think things will change going forward.
Certainly. I mean, it was a sensational partnership, as you say, and let's hope we see plenty more of both players in the future, for sure. Gentlemen, it's been a real pleasure and a privilege to kind of talk to you today. Our time is now coming to an end. Just once again, thank you so much for coming on. I think Shamim Bayoli was asking kind of off air why I do this, and I guess just to kind of summarize, it's a bit of a passion project basically for me. I followed Bangladesh cricket and the Bangladesh cricket team all over the world. And really, the idea behind the website, SightScreen, cricketjournal.com. The idea behind the website, I guess, is to give a bit of a British perspective on Bangladesh cricket. Obviously, there's a huge fan base in the UK that follows Bangladesh cricket, and I think that voice doesn't often get heard, maybe not within sort of Bangladesh mainstream media. So it's really an opportunity for me to kind of give a bit of a UK perspective on things, and hopefully both of you have found it enjoyable today, and let's hope that we maybe meet up again in the future.
Absolutely. You're doing a great job. I think this is a wonderful initiative to be appreciated, having lived in London for many years and then traveling there. My son actually lives in London, not too far from you. So this is, I mean, I know about the interest in cricket, in addition to interest in other things about Bangladesh, but specifically cricket, because cricket has brought us that success and something to be proud of as a Bangladeshi. So what you're doing is greatly appreciated, and I hope you carry on the good work.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much, Shamim Bhai. And on that kind of happy and positive note, let's just end it. Thank you both so much.
Pleasure.